Tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Thanks, Pat, and you're very welcome back to Tip Today. Now, one of our listeners says, I'm listening to that gentleman, John, and he is right. It's a disgrace, the parking in Thurles. The same is starting all over again. Cars parked on footpaths and people cannot get out of their gateways. Apparently, the Gardaí are meant to be driving around monitoring all of that. I had to ring the Gardaí last week. There was a match in Thurles and I couldn't get my car out of the gate. It's just not good enough. It says here, please read this out. Thank you. Well, there you go. That's it read out for you there now. Fran, the Irish Prison Service should copy the Russian model. That would sort out a lot of their problems. Caroline says, run the prison as a prison and put the thousands of euro into the health service, it says here as well. Bill was on to us to say, if the use of firearms is recognised as the defence of human life in the face of serious criminality, maybe we could tweak an article of the Constitution and give our politicians the go-ahead to legislate for another murderous Holocaust, it says here. Let's strike twice before the libertine iron cools. And tongue very much in cheek there from our Bill in Templemore, I would imagine. Final one for now. The statement made about arms for rural areas was crazy. Take a look at the US. If you have a gun, you must be prepared to use it and prepared to get shot. Criminals now are more than prepared to use arms, and they think the house they intend to rob is armed. They will shoot first. Absolutely crazy advice, it says here. That's all in on 083-311-3311. An amazing collection of pictures has been digitized and gives a fascinating insight into rural life in Tipperary all the way from the 1890s to the 1930s. It's the Murphy Collection, and it was donated to the County Library by the Clifton Brown family. Now, John G. O'Dwyer joins me now. John is a regular contributor to the programme, and he's been writing about the collection in the Irish Examiner. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning indeed to you, Fran.
And good to talk to you. How big a collection is this, John?
Well, it's over 1,000 pictures, so it's an absolutely huge collection. But of course, initially, you know, it's the idea of digitalization. Initially, all that the Clifton Brown family found were negative, so you kind of, you know, you hold it up to the light and you'd say, I think there's a couple of people in that, but you wouldn't really know. But then when they took it in, and, you know, I think Tipperary were very lucky that they had someone with the expertise of Dr. Pat Bracken, because he's a historian, but he also had the expertise to digitalize the whole collection, catalog the whole collection, and in doing that, then a wonderful story that gives us a completely new view, I think, on life in Tipperary at the turn of the century emerged.
Now, it's 1890 to the 1930s, so it encompasses some of the most important historical events, I suppose, that this country has ever seen, but it's a rather rosy look at the country of that time. Is that fair to say, John?
I think, I suppose, as the Kerry man said, it is and it isn't. You know, I think you can look at things from two points of view. And when you look at the film Michael Collins or The Wind That Shakes the Barley, you see all these things you see portrayed there, even if it's not made explicit, the Kilmichael ambush, that kind of thing. Mm. But remember, most people, you know, war or no war, I say, you must pay the butcher. And war, life goes on. And I suppose one of the big lessons for me as an aside was, about the early 80s, the first time I went to Belfast, and I went out to the Shankillan Falls Road, and I couldn't believe it. I thought there'd be buildings burned out and, British Army around and everything. There was hardly anything there. People were going about their business because they had to. They were going out in the morning. They were doing their shopping. There were shops were open. Everything was going on as normal. And I think behind anything, you know, behind all of that, people have to survive. And I suppose in those tougher times, they were more stoical. They just tended to get on with it. You know, I suppose a vision I always have is they had Dury, who was a lieutenant colonel in the First World War, and he's fighting out at the Somme. Now, there was about 50,000 Irishmen killed in the war. So when you think of it, you know, you look out of Ballinamona, which is a big long avenue, and you see the telegraph by cycling up towards you. You know, just think of that moment.
Yes, and, yeah. You know, it's bad news.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, 50,000 times a telegraph by must have cycled up an avenue or a side, maybe a small house as well as that. He was left in a corner, must have arrived. And you look at that, imagine the moment of opening that telegram. So, you know, they were hugely, and yet they were able to survive, go on, keep the best side out. And so I think it's an incredible thing.
Very much the view of the landed gentry, though. Is that fair to say, John?
Yes, it is, absolutely. But I think, you know, that I suppose to some extent they have been written out of the history of the time.
Absolutely.
But kings went ahead. And what's interesting here, too, is these were the landed gentry, but it shows the new confidence that was there, because they are Catholic landed gentry. Mm. So, you know, it's quite clear that during the 19th century, the Catholics are beginning to assert themselves again. That comes through very clearly. But again, you know, I'd say to be part of the landed gentry at that time, if you were a Catholic family and you wanted to hold on to your land and that, I think you would probably have to some extent have had to play the system. For example, there were other Catholic families like the Ryans of Inch, who were very much involved in the British Navy. The Murphys were in the British, were a long tradition of being in the British Army. The great-grandfather was a magistrate. So you probably had to play the system. But then remember, you know, that was what most people wanted at the time, and the sudden change only came about after the 1916 rising, when everybody wanted independence rather than home rule within the English crown. I mean, at that time, even among ordinary people, there was huge crowds out on the street when King Edward VII came to Dublin in 1913.
Yeah, and we like
1911.
We like to forget about that. And when other royals came to Dublin as well, they were made extremely welcome indeed. I love stuff though, like the cricket match between Cashel and Tramore on the 31st of July, John, 1916, funnily enough, and that was what was important to the people taking the photographs.
Absolutely. This is what they're thinking about. It's a couple of months after 1916. Now, I'd say the full repercussions of that haven't come true. But what's even more interesting is that this is during the Battle of the Somme. I'd say the bloodiest and most awful battle that there ever was in human history, where, you know, thousands of people were being butchered pointlessly every day. And yet these guys are totally relaxed. They're standing around and they're playing cricket. Now, the interesting thing there is, of course, this couldn't have happened without the political situation, which was that there was no conscription in Ireland, whereas there was conscription across all the rest of the UK. Everybody who went from Ireland was a volunteer. These fellas look young and fit enough to have gone. For some reason, they had a choice not to go and they didn't.
That's very interesting. You point out another polar opposite as well when you're talking about the judging the yearlings at the Dublin Horse Show, and of course the lockout of 1913 is going on at the same time.
Yeah, and I presume that's what they have done. I mean, I see the gates of the RDS are closed, and the proletariat, if you want to call them, the ordinary people are locked out there, and there is that, you know, that it went ahead. And, you know, I suppose to some extent that was Labour asserting itself, and one, you know, would have to expect that anyone in the RDS would have been on the side of William Art Murphy. We're only guessing that kind of thing. But again, it just shows that, you know, life goes on all the time, and everybody would have a different kind of a take on life. And, you know, the way I used to be in America one time, and when there was trouble in Ireland, and they said, oh, there's trouble all over Ireland. There isn't, I say, it's just in the north. When you go up to the north, they say, well, no, there's no trouble in this area, but it's out there in West Belfast all the trouble is. And then you go out there and they say, no, it's not on here, it's the street up there. You know, this kind of looks on life from their own point of view.
Of course, hill walking is of huge interest to you, and there's some photographs captured of very early expeditions to Muskrie, for example, in the Glen of Arlow,
and up to the top of Galtee Moor as well as that. There's a picture there from 1915, and they're all in top hats and dresses above on Galtee Moor. When you think of the gear we go up in today, it's absolutely appalling. I imagine they'd all have gotten totally lost. They were just lucky the mist didn't come in on them, but they went up there, but they still maintained the stiff upper lip. And both of them who took the photographs, Kathleen and Edmund, they were people who pushed back the frontiers. They went down to Kerry, and I said it was very unusual, and they went out to the totally Irish-speaking Blasket Islands, where I presume they didn't have Irish, they wouldn't have had at the time, so they wouldn't have been able to communicate with the local people. And that was a time when Robin Flowers was visiting it and saying this is a primitive society. They're up when there's huge rioting in Belfast in 1920, and here they are above, and they're up in the north, and Kathleen is crossing the Carrigar Reed Rope Bridge. Now, they would probably have been protected a bit by their Catholicism, but still, they were adventurous, and they never married, but they seemed to operate as a kind of a couple going around the country. country.
And the Blaskets you refer to, that would be the Blaskets of Peg's heirs, I suppose.
Peg's heirs would have been living there, Trosser. Yeah. Trehan would have been living there as well at that stage. So they went right out at the time, and they're pictured at now the King's House. The Blasket Islands always had somebody who was called the King, and they knew about that, and they were up there, and the pictures were taken there. But that was the time when all the literature, this, you know, a huge creative ferment was taking place on the Blasket Islands. Now, they probably wouldn't have been aware of that, but there wouldn't have been kind of holiday boats going out there. It must have been a considerable effort. I presume they were rowed across in a Corrup to the island. So it shows a kind of an adventurous disposition that very few people who holidayed in Kerry would actually have done.
Well, it sounds fascinating. If people want to view the collection then, John, how can they do so?
They just look up at Tipperary Libraries and then go into Tipperary Studies, and they can look it up there. And I just say it's wonderful because, you know, the work that the Tipperary Studies people do, and like I know they work in the library, but it's kind of, they have to give up their own time for it. And Mary Fanning and Pat Bracken and all those do tremendous work there in keeping our heritage alive. And I think it's well worth a look to just to see how these people lived at that time.
All right. Always a pleasure, John, and thank you very much indeed. That's John G. O'Dowar.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
I've been talking to our resident vet, Mairead of Ara Vets, about my dog Jumper for a number of years. Well, finally they got to meet up because last week she invited us in so she could give him a checkup. This is what happened.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time.
What have you got to say about that? You'll be fine, you'll be fine. Now, we're here. Now, remember what I said. No peeing, no pooing. Is that okay? Are you okay with that? You sure? Okay, come on then. Here we go. Well, Mairead, this is Jumper. I've spoken about him enough to you. You finally get to meet him. He's behaving rather oddly, isn't he?
He's having great chats with him, isn't he? He's telling me all his stories.
Yeah. So what do you make of him anyway?
He's lovely. We're just the first thing we usually do is just pop them up in the weighing scales and get a weight, just in case we need to know for any reason.
Okay.
So I'll just do that with him now.
So he's up on the weighing scales.
We're weighing in here. Will we leave the lead on or off? Hey Jumper, you gonna stand still? So he's about 9.9. He's under the 10 kilos anyway.
Under 10 kilos, and is that good for him? Is that
It's very hard to give an actual weight. Like, we can't say that Cavaliers should be like 5 kilos. Or, you know, every Cavalier is different. So what we want to see here is when I rub him here, I can feel his ribs. Jumper has a nice waist. Do you see the waist here? And he's a little bit of a tummy tuck. So he's actually not too bad. Even if he lost a kilo off here, you know, it's just a little bit tubby there. But he has a lovely waist and he has a lovely tummy. So he's actually not too bad. He maybe, if he came down to maybe, instead of coming up towards the 10, if we kept him down at the lower end of the 9, you know, even, it'd be good for him. But he's actually pretty good. Yeah. Well, we go on into the room and have a
look. Yes, please. Oh, he's taken to you very quickly indeed.
This is Anya.
Hello, Anya.
Hello, how are you?
Nice to see you, Anya. Now.
So, generally what we do after we weigh them is, like, I like to get to know them and let them get to know you. Do you know, you're not going to start sticking your hands where they don't want it or doing anything
that.
He seems really nice and relaxed, don't you?
He normally is, but he was a little scared out there for a while, I think. Maybe it was the other dog or something.
Yeah, there was a lot going on. There was a lot of commotion. So what we do is, like, kind of a nose-to-tail checkup. So if it was a sick dog that was coming in, we'd do what we call, like, a TPR, so temperature, pulse, respiration. Now, look, Jumper's not a sick dog. I'm not going to go taking his temperature when there's no need because it's not really necessary. But we'll have a little feel of his pulse. It's going to be a bit high now anyway. Which he might just hold in his head there for a second, just rubbing him just like Jumper. Oh, best boy. Perfect.
He promised not to pee or poo around the place.
Oh, it's okay. We're well used to it. So then we'll start with, start with his ears and his eyes. So he has lovely, healthy eyes. Sometimes Cavaliers, does he ever get discharge on his eyes here?
He doesn't seem to do, but sometimes he'd be a little damp under the eyes.
Yeah, he's not too bad. Sometimes Cavaliers can build up quite a lot of discharge around their eyes, but he's not too bad. And they get another thing called dry eye.
Okay.
But his looks pretty good.
Because their eyes
protrude
a
yeah,
so they get dry eye and it's really sore. It's like having the wipers on in the car with no rain or no water. So it's, you know, it's scratchy and really sore. Now, his look fine. To actually get a measurement, you have to put two little pieces of paper into their eye. It really stresses them out. He doesn't need it. I can see that there's like, I can see that there's a nice film of, you know, tears over his eyes. So I'll have a little look at his ears. Does he ever have any problems with his ears?
He's had problems once in a blue moon with them, all right, but they're prone to that, aren't they?
Yeah, he has lovely ears from what I can see on the outside. See, they're nice pinky white colour, so they're not red. There's not black discharge. There's nothing like that coming up out of that one anyway.
Okay.
Does he ever shake his head or...?
He did around that time that he had a little bit of an infection, I think, but that's a few good
years. No, they're pretty good, like they're quite hairy. Right. That's kind of Cavaliers for you. I can give them a little clean out afterwards if you want. So what we do then is check their lymph nodes. So they have the lymph nodes here under their chin, like ourselves here. Mm. They have them here in front of their front leg, their shoulder. They have them back here. And all his are pretty good. What we don't want to feel is like swellings all over, you know, because that can indicate things like cancer or, you know, or if they have them just swollen in one area, like up here, it could be a mouth infection or it could be, you know, like tonsils, anything like that. Okay. So his are all nice. Hey, you're really good. Next thing I'm going to do is listen to his heart.
Now, again, I hear that. Are there heart problems with Cavaliers?
Yeah, so Cavaliers are really prone to heart murmurs. We have a lot of puppies that come in, even at a puppy stage, that will have a heart murmur. So you monitor that.
Right.
Hopefully we don't hear any heart murmur.
Hopefully so, indeed. I think this is stressing me more than it's stressing him.
No, there's no heart murmur at this side anyway. Hey, yeah. You give me kisses. Sorry, we were just trying to stop him panting so I could hear his heart.
Yes, okay.
That's all I was doing. But he's, no, he's fine. He's no heart murmur. Yeah, he doesn't have any murmurs.
And he's about seven.
Seven. Yeah. He's actually really good, isn't he, Anya? His weight and everything is brilliant.
Yeah.
From the way you were telling me on the radio, I was worried about your treats. His weight is nice. So now his teeth.
His
teeth definitely could do with a clean. Do you see them?
Oh, God, I do, yeah.
So they're quite bad.
Yeah. Now,
so you can see there, they're all dirty. His gums are a little bit red and sore. Now, I usually do the teeth last because they're not really fond of you sticking your hand. But you can see there, the red there starting to come. Now, I don't think he'd need any extractions, but definitely if you left them teeth in, 6 months, you would need extractions, I'd say, if you didn't clean them.
Yeah.
Do you see them?
No, we'd never see that. I only ever see, obviously, the front teeth where they don't look too bad with the way I see them, but...
Sorry, no
pet. Isn't that incredible?
Check your other side.
It just goes to show you how they need to be checked.
So yeah, they're all quite dirty.
Yeah.
Like there's a little bit of a smell from his breath as well when you smell it there. There's a little bit. So you can see there all that plaque needs to come off. That's, even if you got a toothbrush at that, it's not going to come off.
Right.
You need to get that scaler in and do it. So he does need a teeth cleaned, don't you?
No.
But everything else is really good. How is he for moving around? Were you saying he's a bit slower jumping? And
he used to jump up on the couch so easily, but we noticed in the last year or so. He just takes a couple of goes at it, but he's fine.
Okay, well, just check his joints. So his elbows are here, so I'm just flexing them just to see. And he's lovely range of motion there. See the way he's well able to move them. I would be a little bit worried about his hips because you can see here, when I see straight away, he's lovely and developed here. See the way he's lost like a little bit of muscle off his hips.
Okay.
So you see the way he's a bit more developed up here.
Yeah.
And he's lost a bit of muscle back here.
Is that interesting? Would that be why he's finding it harder to jump than he used to?
All I'm going to do is just, so his extension there, it's not too bad, but he's a little bit stiff.
Right.
This one is better. This side seems to be better than his left. His left is a little bit stiffer. So he doesn't really want me to move that leg back. And it's the same with this left elbow as well. He's a little bit, see there? He's just a little bit stiffer on his left side. But he's pretty good for a 7-year-old. See this one? A lot better. This side, he's a little bit... Yeah, he's a little bit creakier. He's a little bit, I don't want to lift that.
Yeah.
And it's the same with this side. He's a little bit on this side. So, just keep an eye on that. Like, I think he has lost a little bit of muscle here, do you know?
Right.
He's so cute, so cute. But he's really good. You have him lovely. He's groomed lovely.
Yeah, he's...
Is there anything else that's concerning you that you want me to check?
No, it's just, to be honest with you, he is top dog in the house, and you've described it, and that's the way it is. Because he doesn't do what he's told.
Does he ever scoot his bottom along the ground?
No.
No, Cavaliers are prone to gland problems. So right. You'd have people ringing in every so often.
That before,
so they'll put their bottom down and they'll scrape it along the ground.
Right.
So I'll give his ears a clean and I can check them before you go.
Yeah, it'd be excellent, yeah. I can't believe how quiet he is now.
He's brilliant. I need treats for him.
Hmm?
I said, we'll give him a healthy treat. He probably won't like it though.
Oh, I'm sure he will. See, immediately he's...
Do you want that? It's a healthy one. It's not chocolate. No, he says no. That's okay.
I can't believe
most of them say no.
Is he refusing the treat?
Sometimes they do it up here on the table when they...
You're serious? Well, you never refuse anything normally.
It's too healthy for him.
Probably is.
I'd say he's a bit like, are you trying to trick me now?
Yeah.
So all I'm doing there was I put a little bit of ear cleaner into his ear.
Okay.
We never stick things down into their ears. So all I did is put a little bit of ear cleaner and I want to hear that noise. So it's washing down low. And then they usually shake their head, so watch yourself now.
Okay, right.
Wise up. I'll just get the animals to dry it out. And then if you're doing this at home, you'll notice then if there's any discharge, so his ears are lovely and clean.
Okay.
A lot of the time when we do it with dogs with bad ears, they'll be coming out with big, thick, black, gloopy bits.
Will they?
And
that. Yeah.
So his are perfect. That's perfect.
Good.
I'll check these glands for you while he's here. Probably won't look good.
And again, is this something with King Charles?
Yeah, they are, aren't they? Yeah. Like any King Charles that comes in for a grooming, you'd be surprised their glands could be full.
Right.
Well, like his breathing is very good for a King's Charles. He has a nice bit of a nose. You know, he's not really the stuffed.
Really, that plant.
Does he
yeah.
snore at night?
Oh, he snores all the time.
That's just the Cavaliers as well.
Really bad. Sometimes you couldn't hear the television with him. You know?
So. He's a really healthy Cavalier, though. He really is.
Is he? Oh,
the only
good.
Thing is
so
his
bad.
Teeth, like.
Yeah.
So if. Do you know in a case like where people don't know about their teeth, like if you came in a year's time with him, he would be getting his extractions and things because you can see already that it's kind of just building up there. So what happens is that's a calculi of plaque at this stage and that it wears away at their gums.
Right.
You know?
So this is his bottom you're having a look at.
Yeah, just check his hands. Yeah, they are actually full.
Are they?
That one's very full. Okay. Okay. That one is very full there on the left. He doesn't ever drag it, no.
He doesn't, no.
Okay.
No.
I better check the other one out, just he doesn't like it at all.
Yeah, okay. Good boy, Joe. Good boy.
Same this one. Okay. I'll show you what's coming out
of Okay.
Oh, wow.
That's in his gland.
Right.
So I'm surprised he wasn't dragging his bum.
No, he wasn't actually.
Does he ever get constipated? I'm really sorry. Honestly. I know. We left that to last, didn't we?
He doesn't really get constipated. No.
That one was like the size of a grape.
Right.
I'm just getting
a bit. The nice thing about Cavaliers is that they're rarely aggressive.
Oh, yeah,
they don't, you know, like even
I've
even,
never seen him to be aggressive.
No, even when he was really sore. That was sore on him and he was just like that making a bit of a fuss, but he's okay. Oh, good boy, Jumper.
I don't trust you one bit now.
Well, listen, thank you both much. It was great to
he's
be here.
Fabulous. I'm sorry that we had to do that.
Thanks very much indeed. Okay, we're back in the car. What did you make of all of that? What did you make of it? Are you happy now? You don't want to go back there again, sure you don't.
Well, they said you were high class. Well, that was just a lie. Yeah, they said you were high class. Well, that was just a lie. Yeah, you ain't nothing but a rabbit and you ain't no friend of mine. You ain't nothing but
a... Well, that was my wonderful Jumper, our dog, into a visit Maraid and Aravets in Tipperary Town last Friday. All right, we'll take a break and we'll be talking to Alan Kelly in just a few moments about the National Planning Framework.
If it matters to you, It matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
The coalition of opposition TDs has warned that the national planning framework will not pass the Oireachtas, claiming that the 20-year development plan for the country is unbalanced in favour of Dublin and will kill off rural Ireland. Labour TD Alan Kelly, who launched the plan as Minister for the Environment in late 2015, joined with Fianna Fáil's Éamon O'Keefe, Sinn Féin's Eoin O'Brien and Independent TD Michael Fitzmaurice to raise objections to the draft framework, arguing that it was unsupportable in its current format. And I'm joined on the line now by Deputy Alan Kelly. Good morning to you, Alan.
Morning, Fran.
The plan that you launched in 2015, are you saying that the vision you had back then, that this doesn't reflect that in any way? Is that right?
Well, firstly, what I launched was the kickoff of the process. I didn't launch any plan. So basically, I launched the process by which this was to be discussed. This was to be brought to the public's attention, how it was going to be done. But that was it. That's all I did. It was necessary. It had to be put forward. It was going to take a couple of years to do. But that's where my role ended, obviously, because my term as minister concluded. But having said that, I can guarantee you that if I was in office, this plan wouldn't have never seen the light of day. So what's happened here is that they have put forward a plan, this government, which is, it's mainly done by the Department of Local Government and Housing, and Minister Owen Murphy now, and it has a lot of other departments, Transport, the Taoiseach, Energy, all different departments would put their speak into it. It's following a large consultation phase. And really, the plan that's put forward, the draft plan, is put out there as a plan that is their thinking at that time. And, you know, for a government to come out now and say it's only draft, well, it's a very near close final draft when they put it out like that. I know, because I've done enough of consultations down through the years as a government minister. And what's happened as a consequence is that the outcry in relation to the plan means that today they've called a cabinet meeting, special cabinet meeting, to relook at this and to reassess it, because I believe that this plan would be the death knell for, as currently drafted, would be the death knell for rural Ireland.
Could you just simplify it for people who might be too sure about the importance of this plan? It is the vision for the next 20 years.
So basically, for your listeners, the National Planning Framework is now a statutory plan, which it does is it outlines where the population is going to grow into the future for the next 20 years. So, for instance, where there'd be a concentration on trying to get people to live, where there'd be a concentration of infrastructure, where we would provide facilities for education, for health, where we provide roads, where we provide all the other infrastructure necessary, how we change our planning laws, how we drive people towards certain locations, and all of that. So it's basically a vision for 20 years, but the difference between that and the National Spatial Strategy, which was that absolute disaster that was launched previously, because it basically had something for everyone around the it was a political plan, something for everyone on the cabinet table. The difference between this and that is that this one actually is linked in legislation. It's a framework. It's something brought through the Oireachtas. It is statutory. So it really has a huge impact. And what's going to happen is the government, the famous capital plan, they're going to tie that in with this, which, by the way, I believe is the right thing to do. But I just believe that the fundamentals of this plan are absolutely awful. And like, to give you some examples, I mean, there's 1 million more people going to be in Ireland by 2040. My estimation of this plan, well over half of them will end up living in the Greater Dublin area. We know that Dublin can't sustain that. We know this is actually a bad plan for Dublin and a bad plan for rural Ireland. You know, basically, we're going to housing demands, the commuting trends, all of that is just going to get worse for Dublin. Dublin isn't going higher, so the amount of houses and development is going to have to come out. It's going to come all the way down around the conurbation, hitting the other counties. And we all know that's not sustainable. Yet you have, obviously, a huge potential in our other cities, and we welcome that. But really, what about the other towns? What about the areas around? So according to this plan, major towns will be classified as 10,000 or more, which would mean Clonmel would be the only town that would fit into this plan, which would mean that for priority for infrastructure, for priority for IDA jobs, for priority, all of that sort of stuff, any other town will not be a priority. So I don't think that First Data would be coming to Nina under this plan, that Amneal would have gone to Cashel under this plan.
Right. Is that because it's population-based?
It's population-based, and it's contrary to their own strategies, because the government launched the SEDRA report, Plan for Rural Ireland, and they had the figure at 5,000 instead of 10,000. I'll give you another classic. There's two classic real massive clangers in this. If you drew a line from Dublin to Galway, you might as well just cut off the rest of the country. There is nothing in this for anywhere above that line. In relation to airports, the only airport that there's any plan for here is to make Dublin Airport bigger. A new runway, a new train service. Now, they're valid things in their own way. Mm. However, what about Shannon? What about Knock? I mean, we all know that growth depends on people coming through airports, but we need to have growth based on them coming through other airports, not just Dublin.
Joe Carey said that it was unfortunate that you and your colleagues needed to form a coalition and speak through the media instead of engaging directly with the minister involved, and he said it's really amateur hour. Why didn't you sort of get into bed with them and say, look, here's the way it should go, because they did call for your submissions.
We did, Fran. Look, I don't expect anything else from Joe. That's politics. He has to say something as chair of the committee. But I launched this plan. I've spoken to the officials in the department on numerous occasions, as late as last week. I met with Tipperary County Council numerous times. I input into their plan. I input into our own Labour Party submission. Tipperary County Council put in a fantastic submission. I support it 100%. I asked for the timelines in relation to this to be extended. In fairness, to be fair to everybody, Simon Coveney, when he was minister, did extend the timelines at my request. So I've had a huge engagement across this all the time. And we will look to meet the minister. But the fact is, this is a draft plan. And it is a draft plan that's near conclusion, because they're saying they're announcing it in a few weeks. So it can't get you, if it's going to be altered, they're altering it last minute because of, I mean, it takes a lot. It takes a lot for Fianna Fáil, the Labour Party, Sinn Féin and Independents to come together. Basically everyone else almost in the whole House of the Oireachtas coming together to oppose this plan. I'll give you another example.
But I heard Simon Harris say yesterday, Alan, that he had some issues with it and that it was only draft.
But you see, look, Fran, here's the way this works. There's a consultation phase. There's drafts brought in internally. And what they do when they've nearly concluded, they release a public final draft version. And that is very close to what the final thing is. Now what's happening is that they know they've made such a mess of it that they're going to have to go through it again. I believe this needs to be gutted. For instance, the following. As regards planning in rural Ireland, as regards housing in rural Ireland, really, this is going to have a detrimental effect. It's going to set caps on the amount of houses that can be built in Tipperary year on year. Tipperary County Council are hugely opposed to this. The officials, the councillors, every one of them who's come out and spoken have said this would absolutely...
Is this ideology? Is this Fine Gael ideology, do you think?
Yeah, I'd say there potentially is an element of that, but to be fair and to be proportionate, I know... that there are huge issues within Fine Gael on this. I mean, Fine Gael TDs and councillors are up in arms on this. And I know that because it's come through their parliamentary party. I've spoken to many of them. And they're right. I mean, they're on the same side as me as regards wanting to get this changed. The difference here is this, is I think that this was completely underestimated by the government. It is the most important document that they're going to produce. The whole capital plan for the future of our country will be based around it, where we're going to build roads. For instance, we've often spoken about the need to do the N24.
Yeah.
Waterford, Cork, Galway, Limerick, link up the ports, link up with the railway systems, all of that sort of stuff. Will that be the decision on that? Will be based on whether this document is right in the first place. So that's how critically important it is. And I know, I've read this document. I know the officials. They used to work in my department. I know how this came to this point. And I can tell you, this will not fly. It will not fly in this stall, and it needs to be completely and utterly gutted.
All right, Deputy Alan Kelly, thank you for talking to us today. 1800 938 007.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
And you're very welcome back to Tip Today. Now, a lot of bits and pieces in, wanting me to put various things to Alan Kelly. Sadly, we didn't have as much time as we might have liked with the deputy today, so we will get around to that at another time. Glad to be joined in the studio now by David Shanahan, who is CEO of Tipperary Chamber, and also Paula Carney, who is a company director. And you're both very welcome, and thanks for coming into us today. David, could I start with you? Because broadband has been the big topic over the past few days with the news that AIR has now pulled out of the scheme. How worried are Tipperary businesses about this, and what effects are we talking about?
I think it's going to have a huge effect, really, because what it's going to mean is that the bidder that's left basically don't have the infrastructure. They're not a very big company. The guy, I think it's Enid is the name of the company, yeah. And they're not a very big company. They don't have a lot of people on the road to roll out the infrastructure. And historically, kind of like the UK with BT, Aircom own all the lines. So if something has to be set up in an exchange or on the line, AIR have to do it. So basically, you know, these people are, you know, saying they're going to get you connected, but they have to go to somebody else to get you connected, if you know what I mean. It's very, very hard to see how the broadband rollout out the country particularly will be done in good time. You know what I mean?
Is it, I mean, on this programme last week, it was called chaotic, it was called a disaster. Yeah. Do you go along with that?
I go along with that. And I mean, obviously in most of the provincial towns now, there is good broadband. I mean, you get 65 meg or 100 meg here in the town. That's grand. But you go 5 miles out the road.
Yeah.
I mean, I know one fella living out in Redmondstown, and he's living on the side of a mountain, and he can't get it anyway in ship shape or form.
Well, in my house in Anacarty, we can't even get phone signal unless we go into the front room. You know,
and I mean, Paula is living in Ballyluby. She had to move down from Dublin.
What's the experience there in Ballyluby?
It's very bad.
It's really bad, crazy.
Yeah.
Something has to be done, and it's getting worse, actually.
Yeah.
Getting worse.
Yeah. I used to have an ISDN line years ago. That was actually more stable than my broadband. And even though I get AIR out to visit on particular days, oh no, you're fine, you're getting a 3 meg. We've never got 3 meg, ever. And we're paying for service, and it's not fit for purpose.
And for people who just use broadband every now and again or something, just from a business point of view, David, just if you can sum up
from a business point of view, I know of a lady that I know who's running a multi-million business, right, from her house in North Tipperary. Some of the time she works from home, and she's working off a 2 meg dongle provided by Three. Right. Now, generally, you're supposed to have north of 10 megs to be able to do business, to do Skype, whatever else it would be. So if that lady has to go along and do, let's say, a website update, put a new product up, it's extremely difficult. Right?
It's incredible. And you're a company director, Paula. Is it damaging your business?
Well, I work from home as well. So I work for a large law firm based in Dublin. So being able to work from home is huge for me. I have a little lad who's got, learning difficulties, and it's good for me to be around. Yeah, it does. You know, when I'm doing some big reports or doing GDPR investigations, etc., I have to go to a hotel, find a quiet spot, go through my mobile phone because we have to use secure networks, and that's where I have to work. So it's absolutely crazy. I should be able to work in my own home where it's safe and secure and get my job done, and I just can't.
Isn't it just incredible? Now, part of what you're going to talk to us about today, Paul, I know, is GDPR, which is General Data Protection Regulation, and I suppose it comes into this in some way as well. Where are we now with that?
Okay, so the GDPR itself is coming into force on the 25th of May this year. We have 108 days left to comply, to be ready. Okay, this is the biggest significant change in data protection since the end of World War II, and it is a human right. It's a huge piece of regulation coming through from Europe, and it's a regulation, not a directive, which we normally work with. So it's across the board, across all union states. The material scope is very significant. It covers basically any data processing by anybody in any type of volume. So whether you're a small home operator, a consultant, a GAA club, a parents' association, you must comply with this regulation.
Right, so this is going to affect everybody, right down to grassroots.
Everybody. And a lot of people are not aware of it.
I was going to say, are we even prepared?
No, we're not. The majority of businesses, I deal with, some businesses are in the process of their GDPR readiness plan, but a lot of businesses aren't. A lot of people are going, but the GDPR has nothing to do with me. I process, business data like, Paula Carney working for a law firm. That is personally identifiable data and is in within scope of the regulation.
Right.
So any data you're processing is in scope.
What about if we fall down on this data protection? What are the punishments for that?
They're huge. They're significant. They're dissuasive, and they will be enforced. I suppose they start at 2% of worldwide turnover, or a good few million, and also you're going up to at least 4% of global turnover and 20 million. So you're looking at big challenges for business.
But there's very good reason for this, though, isn't there?
There is. Very good reason. The way technology has gone today, data is flying everywhere. You don't know where your data is. And as a data subject, an individual, you have that right. And this regulation is really enforcing that right, enforcing the right for you to be able to say, I don't want my data processed. I don't give my consent, or I withdraw my consent.
Right.
And there's been so many things, within cyber attacks and data breaches going on. This is to protect us as individuals, not to cause problem for business.
And sometimes the subtlety of what's coming on online, where we do give permission for our data to be used, we're being conned. Because I was talking to somebody who builds some of these apps, and he was talking to me about how they make it attractive for you to just press, go on, work away.
Exactly. It's made so simple for you to opt in, to consent in, but so difficult for you to get out of it.
Yeah.
A lot of the applications and stuff, you have to be very aware, are there to collect data and to use your information. You're giving your information away freely without reading the fine print. Where is it going to?
Right, where that brings us then, David, what about Tipperary businesses? Are we ready for this?
County Tipperary businesses, well, basically the Chamber of Commerce in conjunction with County Tipperary SkillNet are running courses. Paul is giving the course, the seminars and course to individual companies on GDPR to update them. So if anybody's any queries about it, you can ring 052-612-6500 and County Tipperary SkillNet folks will help out on that and keep you abreast of the courses. There is an online course coming up in March, which is on the County Tipperary SkillNet.com website, and there's also information on our weekly newsletter from County Tipperary Chamber.com. So we're very much on the pulse of this at the moment, trying to get our members involved. As I say, a lot of people haven't been informed so far, so as we head towards May, some people will panic. I'm advising people not to panic,
right?
Because we'll all still be alive, eating, drinking, breathing air on the 26th.
But it is serious.
Right. The fines are serious.
I presume there's a cost to preparing yourself for this, Paula. Are there funds available for it? Is there any funding available towards
there it? Isn't actually, I'm talking to different departments before in relation to funding. There isn't funds available for it. You have to pay for this yourself. And yes, of course, there's going to be costs. You have to improve your technology. Yeah. You've got privacy by design and default. You have to make sure your security protocols, your documentation, there is a huge piece, and there should be funds made available. Like I would, for a small business to go and find 10,000-15,000 euro to go and get GDPR ready is a lot of money to ask them, especially when they weren't aware and it's not in their budget for the year ahead. And it's not just ending when the GDPR comes in. Mm. You have to self-regulate.
All right. Again, if people out there are concerned about this, David, people in business, what can they do again?
Well, if they call County Tipperary SkillNet 052-612-6500 and talk to the ladies in SkillNet, Karen and Sabrina, they can keep them abreast of courses that are coming up to advise in GDPR seminars that Paula will be giving. Paula has a lot of experience in this department, and she's a director of the chamber as well, which is great for us. So that's our approach at the moment, in County Tipperary.
We don't have a lot of time left, but where the chamber is concerned, anything coming up that we should know about, David?
We have a social media and selling event on the 26th of February in the Clonmel Park Hotel, featuring Ron Immink, who's a kind of a social media guru, and it's sponsored by Ulster Bank. We have the Clonmel Spring Expo in association with the Tipperary Local Enterprise Office at the Clonmel Park Hotel on Thursday, March 8th at 5 p.m. as part of National Enterprise Week. We may be launching our business awards at the same event, but we haven't made a final decision. You've heard about Deals opening in the showgrounds, so they seemingly will Pep & Co as well, and they're a clothes shop, and they're going to be about 25 people employed there. And Julian was on to me this morning there to say like they've 1.5 million visitors there per year, so things are going well in the showgrounds. That's everything that's happening with the Chamber at the moment. I hope that's a good enough summary for you. Yes,
absolutely. David, great to see you again. And Paula, lovely to meet you. And thanks very much indeed for that. We'll take a break. News is on the way.